Hello and welcome to another episode of Tempo Talks. I'm Ryan.
And I'm Aaron.
We're so pumped to have you with us today. We have a pretty special episode that we recorded with Lindsay Q here in South Texas. And she's somebody that I've been connected to for the past few years that I met via the glorious social medias. And we've grown together from there in our friendship and then also in our following. She's taught me a lot about it. And it's been really fun to follow along with her running too, both as a coach and someone who's really focused on the shorter distances post-collegiately, which is really cool to see.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's always cool to talk to someone who's built a business and kind of a social media following from essentially scratch. You know, it's one thing when you're an Olympian or a big time collegiate athlete or big time coach and you kind of amass a following in that way. But when you grind it out and, you know, just work as hard as you can to grow that business, it's an interesting conversation to have. So that was an enjoyable aspect of this episode that I think a lot of people will really like.
Yeah, I'm curious, Aaron. I want to ask you a question before we kick things off. What do you think goes into creating a following like that when you don't have, you know, the credentials of, like you said, an Olympian or a world champion or somebody that was featured in the New York Times or something like that?
Honestly, I feel like it is a lot of time. Like, you know, I feel like when you engage with people on those platforms, you'll tend to get a following. And obviously, you've got to produce, you know, content that catches people's eyes. And, you know, even the written content on something like Instagram has to be quality. But I feel like engagement and time spent is really, it's almost like running. You know, the more time you spend running, the more miles you put in, the faster you'll get, the better your endurance will be. Same kind of thing with social media. I feel like you only get into it what you put out, or get out of it what you put into it. So she's clearly, you know, put in time and effort into her platform, and it's really paying off, and it's affecting her coaching business as well.
Yeah, positively, if I might add. Yeah. And I think I found the same thing with my own coaching practice is growing my reach on social media has helped with also growing the business that I'm trying to do, you know, on the side of a corporate career as well.
Absolutely.
So it's been fantastic. But where can we follow her on social media?
Yeah, so you can connect with Lindsay on Instagram at OnTheRunFit. And of course, her website is also OnTheRunFit.com. You can learn more about her coaching and other aspects of what she does. So we encourage you to connect with her there. Let her know how you enjoyed the episode. And definitely, if you are liking this episode and liking the content that we're putting out, please share it with your friends and family as well.
Yep. And you can follow us on social media too, because we have quite interesting things that we like to put out there, both with our own personal running journey and Tempo Talks, including following along with past guests and what they're doing. So we always like to share what's continuing to go on in their lives. But you can follow Aaron at Tempo Talks Aaron on Instagram. I'm at Ryan Miller 34. And then, yeah, we appreciate it so much when you give us feedback, positive, neutral, negative, and likes and reviews on all the various podcast platforms. So thank you for the love and support.
Absolutely. And we hope you all enjoy this episode. Please, as I said, share it. And yeah, we're going to have a good time with it.
Let's do it. Lindsay, welcome to the Tempo Talks podcast. How are you doing today?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. You and I have known each other through social media for the last few years. But yeah, we were just remarking before we got started that this is the first time we've actually ever actually chatted like in person. Somewhat in person. You know, we can see and hear each other right now, which feels so cool because I feel like I know you really well and you probably feel like the same, you know, vice versa with me.
Yeah, and even but have mutual friends.
Yeah, seriously, we were just talking before, shout out to Melissa Dirksen. Went to high school with her when she was Melissa Jones, and now she's one of your best friends and training partners.
I'm going to run with her tomorrow.
Nice. Well, hey, I'm going to put you on the spot right as we get started, okay?
Okay.
This is a really tough question, and I want you to really think long and hard about it, okay? You're at the Grand Canyon, right? All of a sudden, there's a big gust of wind. It just comes out of nowhere. And your husband and Sadie, your puppy, all of a sudden are hanging off the edge of the Grand Canyon. And for some reason, you have one arm tied behind your back. I don't know how that happened. You have one hand. Who are you going to grab and yank back up from the edge of the Grand Canyon?
It's funny that you're asking that because we've had conversations very similar to this pretty often. I mean, of course, I have to say my husband, but I think we all know the real answer.
Yeah. So for anyone who doesn't follow Lindsay on social media, she has the cutest dash hound. I'm pronouncing that correct, right? Wiener dog, essentially.
Yeah, wiener dog, whatever.
Okay. Named Sadie. And Sadie does like everything with you. Does strides on the track, goes paddle boarding, is in the gym with you. So cute.
Yeah, we have separation anxiety from each other.
That's something I'm interested to see Dachshund doing strides.
Yeah, she loves
like it.
It
would be pretty, pretty humorous.
It is. Sight. They actually have wiener dog races in Kyle and Buda in April. I don't know if they're going to have them this year, but there's like thousands of wiener dogs there racing.
Have you ever entered Sadie in a wiener dog race before?
No, we've been twice and everybody's like, she trains with you all the time. Why don't you enter her? She'd probably win. I was like, I don't know, but maybe we'll try this year.
Oh my gosh. That would be so cute. I feel like she needs to be in like a wiener dog triathlon with everything you do with her.
Right. She could do it all.
I know. Seriously. Well, we're so excited to have you on, and I'm really curious and wanting to talk about how the pandemic has affected you, not only with your own training and running, but you coach and mentor a lot of athletes as well. And it's been such a unique time the last year with motivation, with how you actually get to meet up with friends and build community. It's just been really difficult. So I'm curious, when the pandemic set in last March, what were some of the things that you had to change about your own running routine?
I feel like my routine honestly didn't change like too much because I've always been super consistent no matter like what my lifestyle looks like of making sure that I'm getting my runs and my workouts in. If anything, like the only thing that really changed was I got up later because I was getting up at like 4:35 in the morning and I was like, oh, this is kind of nice. I get to sleep in until like 6:30 every day.
Yeah, that is really nice whenever you don't have to run in the dark every single day.
Yes, I know. It's nice having light.
Yeah. So was that change of getting up later as a result of kind of like the career shift that you took, or was it purely because of the pandemic and you just maybe weren't meeting some of the athletes that you coach in person anymore?
Well, at first it was like purely because of the pandemic, because in March I was still teaching. We went to online, like we went on our spring break and then we actually never went back to school after that. So, I mean, I was still like teaching, but it was just from home online. And then after that, it was more, because of just the career shift.
Yeah, that makes sense. So as you started to talk with some of your athletes as the pandemic set in, what were some of the things you were telling them? And I'm really curious because you have that minor in sports psychology. So you probably had obtained a few skills where you could understand where athletes where their minds would go, right? When their training might be limited or compromised in any way. So what were some of the things that you would talk with them about?
I feel like it was really different with like my high school athletes that I had versus like my online clients that maybe were training for like a half marathon or a marathon, 5K, whatever, with my high school kids. I mean, we mostly were telling them just focus on the future. I mean, we don't know what this is going to look like. You know, we may come back in the summer and have a district track meet. We may have a regional estate track meet. And even if we don't, then you just have to shift your mindset to, well, we're going to keep our training going and keep working out because it's going to make us better for next year.
Yeah, especially that has to be really tough for senior athletes, mm-hmm. right? And trying to console them when they had probably built this up to be like their last hurrah, or like, you know, at least in high school, of taking yeah. their shot at making it farther than they ever have, or winning some district, regional, state championship, mm-hmm. anything like that if they had aspirations. So was it different talking to the younger athletes versus the older ones?
Yeah, it was. Like you said, especially the seniors. I mean, once we got to the point where we knew that we probably weren't going to have a season anymore, I mean, we really stopped focusing on like training for them at that point and just focused on trying to make their senior year as special as possible. It wasn't even about training anymore. I mean, we went and put yard signs in their yard that, you know, told them congratulations and made them goodie bags and all that kind of stuff, just trying to do anything little extra that we could. Since they did miss out on such a big thing.
Yeah. So how does that work for a senior that maybe has aspirations to get a scholarship, whether it's partial or full? Because, you know, like we witnessed this year, a lot of professional runners doing things like going for FKTs on certain trails, fastest known time, you know, like doing all kinds of different events, or like Des Linden is a prime example yesterday, mm-hmm. running kind of a 50K that was essentially made for her. So what do high school students have to fall back on in, you know, in these types of times where their meets are getting canceled? Cause they probably don't run, you know, go try for FKTs. I'm assuming. Right.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah. I feel like that was really hard for them. And honestly, like, I don't even have a full answer to that one because of the career shift that happened. So it kind of like didn't keep up with that anymore after. But I mean, I would say whenever, you know, in March, April, and May, I feel like they pretty much didn't really have an option. It was like, you know, colleges were going to be taking chances or looking just at their previous times, or, you know, there might've been some like really small meets still where like maybe, like you said, like an unofficial type thing where it's just giving them an opportunity to go run a certain time.
Yeah. I want to shift it back to the adult athletes you were working with too, because that's where you've had a little bit more continuity, and we're going to hit on that career shift because that's mm-hmm. really interesting and fun to talk about as well. Yeah. But with your adult athletes, I've kind of seen with the ones that I work with that there was almost like two divergent paths you can go down. Maybe three actually, right? Path one leads you to just hoping that races actually happen. Mm-hmm. And when one gets canceled or postponed, you go and find another. And you keep doing that until something actually happens, you know? Option number two was going the virtual race format. Sometimes you can combine those two options and plan on doing a race. If it's canceled, you'll shift to a virtual one. But some people really dove into the virtual world head first, right? Mm-hmm. And then the third one would just be, hey, I'm not going to risk anything going out in public, going to races, anything like that. I'm just going to train, put my nose to the grindstone, be ready to go. And along with that, some people probably took a break or lost motivation and kind of like fell back from running a little bit. So where did you see a lot of your adult athletes kind of leaning towards, or did it just depend on the individual athlete?
Yeah, I think it totally just depended. Like you said, I mean, I had all three of those versions of people for my adult athletes where, yeah, some, it was just like, hey, we had this race on the calendar. It's canceled. When's the next one? And so just kept on like rearranging the calendar. I would say I had quite a few that after like we kind of realized that this wasn't going away and races probably weren't coming back, that we chatted and we decided either one to just like base train or to switch the training up. Like, okay, you've been training for marathons and that's like really tedious training for marathons and there's not even one on the schedule, so why not like do some more speed? And I think like two of my athletes, maybe we did like a little mini like speed training sessions where I timed them in a mile because they had never done a mile time trial, and they really enjoyed like changing it up. from just their normal training.
Yeah, it's such a fun, unique challenge to take on the shorter distances when as adults, like typically a lot of us like to just shift to the half marathon, marathon distances. Mm-hmm. Those are sexier as, yeah. as you get into adulthood. And most people think, like, oh yeah, the 5K, the mile, like anyone who pursues that, that's a young person's game, you know. But then once somebody really does dive headfirst into it, those shorter races have all of their own unique challenges mm-hmm. and own unique discomforts to push through. And you can race it a lot more often, which is pretty cool, right? A marathon, yes. if you genuinely want to be your best self as a marathoner and get the most out of yourself, 2 or 3 marathons a year is what's realistic. A lot of people race more, and there's definitely some genetic outliers out there that can recover insanely fast and probably do more than that, but that's pretty typical. So you were doing that with your own athletes. What about you personally? Where did your running journey as you started to get on beyond like that initial, those initial few weeks after the pandemic set in, what did you start focusing on?
So going into this, I actually, like end of January, I had a little bit of like my foot was hurting, and it was never a bad pain, but I don't know, like I'm not an injury prone person and I've never really had anything. And so I was like, at that point, I was trying to do a couple of things just to see if I could get it to go away. And I had actually like dropped my mileage. I mean, I don't run a lot of miles anyways, but I like dropped my mileage like way down. I think I was only doing maybe like 10 miles a week. And yeah, it just kind of felt like perfect timing because like I said, it was end of January that started. And so then in March, I mean, I was mostly lifting because we have a home gym in our garage, which is awesome and super convenient. So I was lifting a lot and then just going on like short, fun little runs. I'd take Sadie for like a 1 mile run with me around the block. I think my husband came with me maybe one time. So I was kind of just having fun with my training and changing it up also and doing what I could. And then a little bit later, got back into just doing like fast stuff. I really had decided that that's what I like doing. I've never been like a big distance runner anyways. Like to me, 5K is like long because I was like an 800, 400 runner in college. And for a while I was like really into 5Ks and training for those. And I'd say probably back in like the fallish, I had decided like, you know, I still want to be able to run a decent 5K, but that I would really like to train for like the mile and even try and find some track races and see what I can do in like an 800 and a 400 still.
Yeah. Honestly, you're knocking right on that door. If the PR from your website is correct, you run 504 for 1500, right? I think that'd be pretty cool to see you take a shot as you like continue to hone that speed again. And you have the base that you've built from your 5K training. Mm-hmm. I know you've done a half marathon before too. If it would be possible to maybe crack 5 for 1500, is that something that's entered your mind before?
Yeah, it has. The 1500 is kind of hard though, because I have to enter like in college races. Like they don't just have those. And I've heard, and this is usually the time, like April-ish, that I will go like enter unattached at like Trinity University or whatever. But I've heard that they're not like allowing unattached athletes. So I guess I haven't like thought about it that much because I feel like 1500s are hard to find, but I am actually entered in a mile race, the Schrader Mile, May 1st.
Nice. I ran the Schrader 1600 when I was in high school too, my junior and senior. And that's where I set my PR my junior year. So hopefully I'll pass. Nice. I'm passing some of that good juju.
Yeah, thanks.
through the virtual space to you to hit a good time there.
So out of all of the events that you've dabbled in, what's your favorite so far?
I honestly, I love the 400 meters. People think I'm crazy, but I don't know. Like even in high school, I loved that race. And then I was kind of forced to run the 800, and that ended up being my best race in like end of high school, all through college and whatnot. I hated the 800, but that was my best one. And I don't know, after running the 800 so long and then going back to the 4, I was that person in college who like I was the alternate on our 4x4 team, and like the sprinter girls, they were faster than me, but they always had some type of like injury that they couldn't run the 4x4. Oh, my leg was cramping, whatever, whatever. And so I always got to run it and I was so excited. And they're like, you're crazy.
No, that's the 400. I don't have a track background. I didn't run track in high school. So It's funny to me because I think back to, you know, people who specifically do track races, 400, 800 even. And it seems so funny to get so geared up and ready for a race that's like 2 or 3 minutes,
yeah,
you know, or less. I mean, obviously shorter distance, the less. But I've kind of gained an appreciation for them watching like YouTube, you know, old track videos on YouTube and stuff like that. It's just the 800 seems interesting to me because it's just long enough where you're not like an all out sprint the entire time necessarily. But I don't know. It's crazy. Yeah.
I think the 800, I will say I've run everything from the 100 up to a lot of people actually don't know this, but I did do one full marathon. So I've literally run like every single event. And I, to this day, say the 800 is the hardest race.
Nice. Do you have aspirations to do another marathon?
Nope, I don't. I did it in 2012. And that's what people told me, like right after I said I didn't like it. And people were like, oh, just wait a little while, wait a couple months. And here I am, like, 8 years later, 9 years later, whatever. And I'm still, no, the only time that I like had a tiny desire was a couple years ago. I went to the Boston Marathon to watch. Some of my friends were running and that was a really cool atmosphere for sure. And even just like at the airport, seeing everybody in their jackets and medals, I was like, oh, it'd be kind of cool to run sometime. But that lasted maybe a week. And yeah, I literally have no desire to do another one.
Well, Aaron, I think the truth here really is that Lindsay wants to gain experience in the ultra marathon distance. Now. And she really has her eye on 100 miles. So you would really run the gambit of being like really focusing on the 400 and then working all the way up to 100, you know?
I'll leave those up to you, Ryan.
Okay, we'll do that. And I just want to say that you said like what your favorite event is. My favorite race to spectate is the 800 and 1500 because I feel like it's like the perfect blend of race tactics, mm-hmm, right? And there's a lot that you can do even if you aren't the fittest athlete in the race to win if you're smart. I.e., look at Matthew Centrowitz of the U.S. winning the gold medal in the 2016 Olympics in Rio.
Yeah.
He didn't have the fastest PR in the field by a long shot, nor was he the most credentialed going in, but ran a super awesome tactical race to win the first Olympic gold for an American, male or female, I believe, in like 100 years or something.
Yeah.
So, and the same goes for the 800 too. Those events are so much fun to watch. And then when you're in it too, it has to be fun as well because you can kind of tweak your tactics in addition to working on your fitness to help you continue to improve versus you run a 400. I mean, the primary tactic, unless you're on an indoor track where you have to work on cutting in, mm-hmm, and stuff like that. But the primary tactic is just go as fast as you can, get to the
exactly
finish line, stay in your lane. And then you get to 5K, 10K marathon. It's like, okay, tactics, like you either sit behind somebody or you just run your own race. And it's like, typically whoever's the fittest just runs the best for those events.
Yeah, for sure.
So pretty cool. I want to ask you really quickly about the home gym you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
I feel like in the pandemic, a lot of people have been, obviously, well, big gyms have been closed, right? I know for myself, mm-hmm, I had a gym at my employer that I would go and do my core workouts at and my stretching and stuff after runs, you know, either at lunchtime or right before work, things like that. And people lost access to that over the last year. And maybe some of it's starting to come back, but a lot of people are probably really interested or tried to build their own home gym. And I'm raising my hand over here that my wife and I have built our own home gym over here. Not as nice as yours, but we're getting there. So what went into building that? And I'm sure it was put together over time and you continually add and tweak it. But just kind of walk us through like how you went about constructing it.
So that's actually way more my husband than me. And we've had it almost since we moved into our house, which was like 6-ish years ago. He's just always really been into lifting weights. I wasn't as much at all. So he had gotten like a bunch of gym equipment from, let me see if I can get this right. He used to work at a mechanic shop and that's where he learned to like lift weights and work out. Like he never was in athletics. He never worked out, didn't do anything like that in high school. And whenever he worked at the mechanic shop, this older guy taught him how to lift weights and they would go lunch break after work. He got super into working out. This guy was like an old school Marine and he'd like have him dragging chains and all this kind of stuff. But I guess that guy stopped using his equipment, and my husband one day went and picked up, like, I don't know, like 2,000 pounds of weights from him. So that's kind of where our home gym started. And then we just slowly, started building and getting more equipment and kettlebells, dumbbells, squat rack, bench, all that kind of stuff.
That's awesome. Ryan just froze and dropped out, so we'll have to cut this part out, but no big deal. He'll probably pop back in a second. Let me write this down. Keep track his of times.
Video wasn't on at first. And
it happened on the last one that we were doing. Hey. You. Could you hear us? I know you said. Oh, did it? Oh, you didn't hear the answer. It was a good answer. Yeah, she just said how they got it, you know, her husband kind of getting involved in weightlifting through his job. So I'll bring it back in. Yeah.
That's okay.
Cool. I'll get us back in. So have you seen a huge benefit in like your running and just overall maintaining wellness and things of that nature since you've done lifting? I don't know how big of an impact it had on you when you were a collegiate runner, but has it had a positive impact? And have you altered that a little more as you've had this home gym and the availability to prioritize that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I would say it's definitely been beneficial to me. Kind of funny enough, being like a mid-distance / almost sprinter in high school and college, I actually didn't really lift weights. I think that was still whenever the mentality was more like, oh, you're like, you know, I did cross country too. And it's like, you're a distance runner, you don't need to lift weights. And we also just didn't even have very much access to that stuff. So really 5-6 years ago is when I really started to get into lifting weights. And I think it's definitely helped. It's hard to say as far as if it's made me quote unquote faster, because I shifted from what I ran in high school and college to different as an adult. But I would say the number one thing that I think it's helped with is preventing injuries. I personally can't tell the difference day to day, but it's funny. I'll see a memory pop up from 6 years ago. And I thought I was somewhat muscular then, but I'm oh, I really wasn't So yeah, I think it's been a big help. And having I'm the type of person I love running. I love being able to go out the door and run. And I don't think if I didn't have a home gym, I wouldn't be lifting, because I wouldn't want to spend the time or the money to go somewhere and get it done. Yeah. So it's super convenient to have it in the garage.
That's exactly where I am right now, because I love running. I love getting out the door, love just being outside and putting the miles in. And, you know, on a normal day, on a normal week, I'm a 40 and 60 mile a week runner. But then I struggle with doing the preventative maintenance. And right now I'm dealing with the results of that with an injury. And so the idea of lifting and cross training and, you know, doing things to better my running is all of a sudden becoming important to me when I'm not able to run.
So yeah. It'll become important really quick whenever you get that first little injury or whatever. That's what my husband's really into, body mechanics and preventative stuff. So he's been a big help to me, and I've been able to learn a lot from him as well on keeping me healthy.
Yeah, I think that's where a lot of athletes, we kind of believe that if we go into the gym and do the strength training, that is what makes us fast, right? You become more powerful, or whatever people want to think happens. And in part, a little bit of that is true, I'm sure. But the main part for distance runners is that if you can build a stronger, more resilient body, you can handle more training that has a larger impact on your running ability, primarily influencing, you know, how strong you are aerobically, right? So if you can be strong enough to move up from running 50 miles per week with one quality session up to 65 with two quality sessions per week, your running fitness is going to take off. And that's not necessarily a result of, like, you know, your squat increasing from 120 pounds to 160 or something, but it's because you're able to run more and at a higher quality, more consistently. So
yeah,
that's really cool. And Aaron, don't worry, I struggled the same thing. I don't use our home gym very much. It's primarily my wife doing her CrossFit. I'm more of like a, just give me some like hip exercises to do on the floor and I'll let you handle the weights and things like that. Which, Lindsay, you're great about that too. I've seen on your social media that you put out a lot of great things for people to do with partners themselves that doesn't always require, you know, a bar with some weights on the side or like actual equipment, you know. What does like your programming for strength training look like for your athletes?
So I don't do a ton of programming for strength workouts, but I do offer it if one of my athletes wants it. So it's totally dependent. Like, I tell them that I can modify pretty much anything to what they have. So, you know, I obviously would like them to have some weight, but even if it's just body weight, I can work with that. I try to, the first thing I tell people to get is bands and kettlebells. If you can get bands and kettlebells, we can get some really decent work done. And then after that, dumbbells. And after dumbbells is whenever, you know, you can move up to the bar and the weights on the side. But yeah, I modify it for whatever equipment that my athletes have access to.
Yeah, and I imagine as a coach, right, you wouldn't want to prescribe strength work to somebody only for them to use improper form and injure themselves, right? The main point, and I'm assuming you have your husband there whenever maybe you're trying new lifts or you want him to look at your technique and make sure like, hey, my knees aren't caving in here, right? And I'm keeping my back straight, right? And he's able to offer you guidance. That's where having the in-person coaching that a lot of us have been missing during the pandemic really comes into play. But the body weight stuff, there's a lot lower risk of, even if your form isn't as proper, you will not have as high risk of injuring yourself.
Yes, you know? Exactly. And that's what I actually have in the works is I have a YouTube channel that I like hardly ever use, but my husband and I, he's the one who's like helped me learn like proper form. And like you said, you know, he watches my knees, he watches my back, he watches my butt, like making sure that I have proper form, and I've learned a lot from him. And so we're in the process of like making videos where, you know, we're breaking down the squat where it's like a 15-minute YouTube video. Because I'd, like you said, I'd feel more comfortable prescribing things to athletes if I can say, hey, here, you can go watch this video on how to do a squat, and now I'll program the squat for you, versus, like you said, I like to recommend in-person training for most of my athletes for strength training, just because then, like you said, they have somebody watching them, because that's a little harder to do over the internet.
Yeah. And you have the perfect backdrop. I've seen in your home gym, I think you have like a really nice wall that y'all have built and some nice flooring that you're able to use on some of your social media posts where you're like showing like various exercises people can do. Where did that idea come from to, I guess, almost like section off a piece of the home gym for actual video recording of things?
Well, just both my husband and I are in there so much recording videos. And once I started doing a lot for posting on Instagram, we just thought for like aesthetic looks that it looked a lot nicer than just a dumpy looking garage wall. So that's really the main reason that we did that.
So you, obviously we mentioned Instagram and talked about Instagram, but, you mentioned having the teaching background and transitioning, and I know that that's something we wanted to talk about. What can you take us back to that like moment where you decided that you were going to take this big leap of faith full time and go into full time coaching and Instagram? I don't know if that was always Instagram was always a part of the idea as well, or if you kind of built a following and then decided to transition that into coaching, but when did the idea of launching your own business really start?
So I've had my Instagram for about 5 years, and when I first started it, I honestly didn't really know like what I wanted it to be. I just kind of created it to post my running journey. And like you said, I gained a large following. And at that point, like, I honestly had no idea that, like, you could run a business from Instagram. And I was enjoying teaching a lot. And I would say in like the past 3 years was whenever I like very first started like thinking about it, that like, okay, I could actually do this for a living. But I never really knew if I wanted to for sure. I mean, I love teaching. I still miss certain aspects of it for sure. But it just got to the point with like my commute and everything where I was working like 80-hour weeks, and coaches don't make a lot for working 80-hour weeks, and I was exhausted all the time. And we don't have kids right now, but we want a family in the future. And I just kind of started thinking about that, and I was like, there's no way that I want to do this whenever we have a family. And so yeah, I struggled for a while if I wanted to take the leap or not, and I didn't even know if this was the right time. But after like sitting down and talking with my husband, we just decided that this was the right time, especially like we don't have kids right now. He has a good job, everything with the pandemic going on. So we just decided it was the right time for me to finally take that leap.
Yeah, that's a huge aspect of it. And I can speak into the fact that a lot of times, like with kids, it's so much more difficult to take that huge leap of faith when I have three. And so it's like, you know, and I work a primary job, like, you know, a typical, you know, 9 to 5, Monday through Friday type job. And I think, you know, just getting that, I don't know if you just want to call it like courage or just that drive or that motivation to do what you love is a really pivotal part in doing something like you did, stepping out into your own world there and doing that kind of stuff. And it's great that you have a partner that can, like, you know, help kind of alleviate maybe some of that stress. But did you kind of dig into first? Were you more on the like trying to figure out how to monetize like Instagram, or did you kind of want to start really focusing on coaching first? What was kind of the foundation of you starting your own business?
So definitely coaching. Kind of a little backstory. So I was a Beachbody coach for a little while. I don't know if you know what Beachbody is, but I don't know. It was kind of new whenever I did it, and I really enjoyed it for a little while. One of my old teammates had recommended it to me, and it was really fun. Like, I got some people at work involved, and we would like do workouts together on our conference and all this stuff. But then, wasn't a fan of it after realized what they wanted me to do next, which was pretty much just be super pushy and you have to get people to sign up under you to make money. And I'm really glad I did it because I feel like I learned I'm not like a business person at all. My husband is. I'm not. And so I feel like I learned like a lot of good strategies, not necessarily that I used, but more learned like what I didn't want to do and realized like all this work that I'm putting in, I could create something on my own. Like, I feel like I had a lot more knowledge just from my experience and my schooling, whereas like anybody could sign up to be a Beachbody coach. You're pretty much kind of like a cheerleader, which is cool. I think it was great for some people, but I just felt like I had a lot more to offer. And so that's actually kind of what motivated me to start my own thing. Plus I had a lot of people starting to ask me, like I said, I was like getting a large following on Instagram, and people had messaged me and asked if I did coaching, and I helped like two friends train for some races. Just between friends and people on Instagram asking me and realizing that I had the qualifications to do it, that's what I really started my business on, was the coaching. And then, that's still, I'd say, the primary thing, but then shifting also to realizing how you can monetize from Instagram as well.
You know, it's so interesting that we had this conversation with Mary Johnson, who's the founder of Lift, Run, Perform, a few weeks ago, and she had a very similar journey to what you talked about, right? She had the corporate career. I don't know, you were in teaching, but you both had careers that weren't as oriented to what you're doing now, which is like coaching and Instagram marketing and whatnot. And then the small leap of faith was kind of like working through another coaching or fitness organization first, learning what you liked, what you didn't like, and then moving out on your own and really crafting mm-hmm. and honing what you think is going to make the best, you know, business for you. So she did that. You did it. I'm trying to do it now too. Like, I've taken a similar leap of faith with my own coaching and running too. And it's just, it's so cool to see a lot of us going on that same journey together. And I know I'll probably mm-hmm. be reaching out to you after this with many more questions, just, you know, just us two kind of like brainstorming like how our businesses are being run and how we're continuing to do with, I mean, not just Instagram, but like on the coaching side, like what are continuing to learn what best practices are in that realm. It's just so neat to think about that. So let's talk about your husband and his support of you taking that leap of faith for just a second here. It takes a very supportive partner for you to walk away from what is like a consistent income, a good job, something you do feel motivated at, right? Being a teacher and a coach with the youth mm-hmm. to fully jump into coaching adults and then the Instagram world and whatever you want to make of that. So what has he meant on that journey and how has he been supportive of you there?
Yeah, I think that's definitely been super helpful to have him. I feel like I really needed that encouragement from him, like telling me that you can do this and just the supportive, you know, that it's okay and it's the right time. Because I don't think like I would have been able to make the decision like on my own, because I like having that security of knowing, okay, I have this paycheck coming this month for this much, but him telling me like, hey, it's okay, we can figure this out, and just encouraging me to do it has been super, super helpful and comforting.
Yeah, and he's the one who takes all of your photos, right? All of your awesome photos that you post on Instagram. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I feel like that's actually partly like kind of how like I kind of grew my Instagram too in the beginning, is because like now there's a ton of people that are into it and people can go take like super awesome high quality photos. But I remember whenever I first started and he was taking pictures of me and people are like, oh my gosh, your pictures are amazing. How did you get that running shot? And that, you know, it was before everybody was doing it. But yeah, he also does photography part time or on the side or whatever, and he loves it and he's really good at it. So, that's super helpful. And it's also like, I don't know, it's cool because like if I'm with friends or something, then they might not understand sometimes or think it's silly that after a run or on vacation, I'm like, hey, come take pictures. But he's 100% supportive. He's always like, and he enjoys it too, likes taking pictures. But yeah, like we're on vacation and he's like planning out, hey, where can I come meet you to take a picture? And yeah, it's really fun. And it's nice that I have him there to help me.
Oh, I love that he can be there for you in that way. That's like one of my biggest struggles is I want to continue growing my Instagram and social media too. And of course, your written content has to be quality, but it helps to have mm-hmm. good video and picture quality too. And that's really hard to do if you're on your own. You know, Aaron's really good at carrying like a GoPro with him and his vlogging cameras mm-hmm. he runs. But I'm like, I hate carrying my phone with me or like a GoPro or anything like that. So I always wait and like I try and batch a lot of my photos all at once, and I'll go meet a photographer at a park and take multiple outfits, get it all done, have like a month's worth of content, and then be able to put it out there at a later date. But no, I think it's so awesome, Lindsay, that you have him there, not just for the photos, but for like the support and love and security. And having him there as a partner in that way gives you the freedom to fail, which sounds bad, but in reality, it means that you can take risks and do things that maybe you wouldn't have done if you needed to be conservative and just have a stable income all the time, right? You can put a little more time into the Instagram affiliate marketing or things like that that may not pay off immediately, but as you grow it, it will continue to become more of like a revenue stream that doesn't require as much time, which is good. That can open you up to work with more people in person and make a bigger difference on the coaching side and really allow you to do whatever you want to do. So I'm just so happy for you there. And I just want to give a shout out to my wife as she does the same exact thing for me. And I'm sure Aaron can attest that his partner,
my wife raises three kids and I will I'm doing it by myself right now for the next 3 days, and I can tell you, y'all check back in with me to make sure that we're all still alive on Saturday, because, whoo, man, I appreciate her right now.
Nice. Well, hey, Lindsay, do you have anything, any events coming up, anything you're working towards, or any travel, anything like that?
Yeah, what's next on your goals for running and things like that? You've mentioned the mile, but, like, what else is big coming up?
I feel like my biggest struggle right now is that, like, I'm enjoying not following a training plan, and I'm just, I feel like I'm pretty good at training intuitively. Like, yes, I know I have a mile race coming up. I know I want to focus on speed. And so, like, even though I'm not following a specific plan, I do feel like I'm training pretty intuitively and pretty close to what I would be doing if I was following a plan. But yeah, I have a mile race on May 1st, and then I don't have anything on the schedule after that, but I really just want to try and find some track races. Like, I would like to either do some more 1600s or 800s or 400s, and just, it's going to be hard to find those. Like, it used to be pretty easy in Texas. They had a lot of, like, all comers meets starting, like, in May, but I don't know. Those might be far and few between.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I've always been intrigued by road mile races. I wish there was more of them, because they're so fun. Because usually the race is so short that towns will put it in, like, a really neat location, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Austin used to have the Congress Avenue Mile that would run from the mm-hmm. steps of the Capitol building all the way down to the Congress Avenue Bridge. Like, so cool, straight shot. I've run a race in Santa Barbara, California, the State Street Mile, which is very similar. It runs down State Street is, like, the main thoroughfare in Santa Barbara, like the main downtown strip. Just mm-hmm. a straight shot going straight towards the ocean. So beautiful. It'd be so That's neat fun. If more races in Texas were like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I wish they would. I ran last year, the Manzano Mile, which I think replaced the... What's the one that you said?
The Congress Avenue Mile.
Yeah, that replaced the Congress Avenue. And I thought it was going to be a straight shot, and it was not. You had two complete, like, 180 turns, and I hated it. I was like, this is terrible. You can't, like, make a 180-degree turn whenever you're running that fast.
Oh, yeah, and that short of a race, that makes that – that'll lose you, you know, 1, 2, 3 seconds. Yeah.
Especially the second one was the last quarter mile. Mm-hmm. So, and I was already dying. And I just felt like that turn after whenever I did that second one and I only had a quarter mile left, like, I didn't have any desire to pick it back up. I was just like, nope, I'm done.
Yeah, I think they do the Manzano Mile as part of the Austin Marathon weekend now. Like, it happens Saturday, and then the marathon and half marathon are on Sunday, which the Austin Marathon, I believe, is, like, next week or maybe the week after that. So it's coming up here. Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, I think the rescheduled date is like, because it's normally in February, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, it was rescheduled. Mm-hmm. Rescheduled for, like, it's, I think it's this weekend.
Oh, wow.
Crazy.
Well, Lindsay, we always like to close our episodes with a couple questions. Aaron has one and I have one. And we'll mix up here because Aaron always goes first. But this time I'm going to take it. okay. I want to know from you what kind of legacy you want to leave, not just for your, like, coaching clients, your family or husband or Sadie, but, you know, when you are 90 years old and you finally hang up your Nike Vaporfly 35s or whatever shoes you're running in at that point, what do you want people to say, you know, they remember about you, and what did you inspire people to do?
Well, that's a deep question. The first thing that came to my mind was really just, like, being kind, loyal, and a good friend. I mean, I'm a relationship person, and I love meeting new people and just building connections and relationships with people. So yeah, I just hope that they remember me as somebody who was helpful to them and inspiring and kind and a good friend.
No, that's a great thing to be thoughtful of. And it probably guides you in everything you do when you do interact and build those relationships with people, right? Mm-hmm. I try and think of the same thing when I'm interacting with you and Aaron and all the people I coach and my family, is mainly that, like, being kind, caring, and compassionate side of it, right? Because mm-hmm. I think we all want to be treated by others like we would treat them, if that makes sense. Like you want to build that harmonious relationship. So I love that.
And I always like to ask, you know, at the, because we're in a time where, you know, the world is just crazy and has been for the last, I don't know, 15 months or so. A lot of times when you have an audience of any sort, whether it's ears on a podcast or eyes on an Instagram following, you tend to be a source of inspiration for a lot of people. They see you doing your hard work and your workouts and things like that, and they find inspiration from you. But I want to know, like, where you're finding inspiration from, and it can be running related or not. And also, I always give the out that it does. You don't have to answer, like, your family. We assume that your husband is inspiring you and your family is inspiring you. But where are you drawing inspiration from right now, currently?
Another deep question. We started with the husband or Sadie question and ended with the deep questions. Right? I don't know. I'd say just like people in general, like my friends, people that I see on Instagram, like people that are getting up and working hard and going after their goals every day, and just seeing people putting in the work day in and day out. That's like been kind of the coolest thing to me about Instagram, is that you get to see other people that are just like you, that you probably wouldn't have gotten to meet otherwise. And I think a while back, Nick Simmons had said something about like, yeah, professional athletes are inspiring, blah, 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 all this stuff, but like that's their job and they have all the time during the day to do that. But he's like, the true people that are really inspiring are the people that, you know, get up at 4 or 5 in the morning and go get their workouts in before they head off to their job all day, and then they're raising families and all that kind of stuff. So really, there's not like a specific person, but I just draw a lot of my inspiration from seeing people doing big things and going after their goals.
Yeah, that's huge. And that's a great answer. And I remember that Nick Simmons, I think, I don't know if it was on Instagram, but it's just a great reminder that there's a lot of people out there that are just grinding away, doing what they can, working full-time jobs, you know, mm-hmm. while trying to maybe pursue a dream. You know, that's a great source of inspiration for sure for me as well.
Yeah, same. And I want to throw out there that as a coach, both you and I, Lindsay, we get a front row seat to that with all the athletes we work with. Mm-hmm. So Instagram is fantastic, but also I think Instagram at times, people, including myself, like tend to put the highlights out there, right? And you don't mm-hmm. see as many of the lowlights. But as a coach, you tend to see pretty much everything. And that's something that I genuinely love and am inspired by too, is seeing my athletes just grinding as much as they can, getting up each day, giving it their best effort, and always fighting back, right? Things are going to be try to knock you down, drag you back, but you just got to keep fighting, keep getting up. Like Rocky in the ring, you know, you keep going down, you're bleeding from all angles, but you just keep fighting. And in the end, if you can do that, you can be proud of yourself.
Yeah, for sure.
So, Lindsay, thank you so much for coming on. Like, had an awesome conversation with you. Yeah, we are just so thankful for you and your compassion and your knowledge. And we thank you for sharing your journey and what's going on in your world right now. So, thanks, Lindsay. Hope everybody out there has a great day. Thanks for listening in. Have a good one.